Christian Podcast. What's up, goofballs? Welcome back to the Bad Christian Podcast. I suppose it's probably the only podcast where the hosts, especially a pastor host, actively try to make themselves look more and more foolish over time. Thank you for joining us. On the show today, it's going to be a really good one. If you caught the last episode, we had some Christian swingers on, and they told us all about their lifestyle. Our guest today has lived a lifestyle that could only be considered more decadent, believe it or not, and that would be living in and working inside of and being the right-hand man and nephew to Benny Hinn. And all of the trappings of that. And we're going to get all the dirt and details from Costi Hinn today, who has since left the ministry and rejected what his uncle Benny does. And looking very much forward to that. Today's show is brought to you by Blue Apron. You get your first three meals for free when you visit blueapron.com/badchristian.
Oh, hell yeah, God showed up.
Give a shit what I put in my body.
You don't ever talk to me that way.
So if you've never done oral, then you're extra virgin.
No, girl, it's my pleasure.
I showed my dad my penis when I was 25 years old. You don't get more honest than that.
1, 2, microphone check. 3, 2, 1. Oh, yes. We are back in the house. We are here to bring the truth. Woo-hoo-hoo. Bad Christian Podcast.
Glad to be up and early with you guys this morning. I was out late last night. Went to the Get Up Kids show.
Ooh.
It was
awesome. Fun.
It was
I've never
so
seen them live,
awesome.
Ever in my life.
Oh, come on. You've seen them live.
When?
I don't know. When we played with them in Europe or somewhere. I mean, we played with them at festival in Europe, and we saw
them. We did?
Them. I've seen them before. Well, we saw them on the Yahoo Out Loud tour with Weezer in 2000, with Ozma and Weezer in Charlotte in an arena.
I don't think I went to that show.
Well, shit.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I've met them in person in Lawrence, but I don't think I've ever been to a Get Up Kids show. I know that sounds crazy, but I'm almost certain. I didn't go to that Ozma show for some reason.
Yeah, well, we're not. Maybe you're not as big a fan as me, but I sure did get a kick out of it. It was, and also
I was going to go to that show, but I was getting laid.
Oh, sorry.
I remember that.
That's why I was clearly free. That's why I've been to so many concerts.
Yeah, you got to go to so many concerts.
Yeah,
I hardly
like
got to go to any
concerts.
I was constantly being laid. It's just insane.
That makes sense.
I regret it though. I regret it because that was a lot of sin.
The
Josh
Head was doing
fun.
Monitors. This is the best part. I love seeing the J-Man doing his work.
Oh, that's
his
cool.
Real work. Yeah, it's so funny watching him do it. It's great. I mean, he's really good at it. I love watching him do his work. It's
awesome.
I went and stood up there at the monitor board with him a little bit and everything. I went with Dan Koch. Me and Bridget went with Dan Koch. And look, let me tell you about Dan. This is hilarious. He'll probably hear this, but it was so funny how we do concerts being old. And me and Dan are on the same page, so I'm kind of making fun of him, but this is what we are like at this point. I was like, okay, you know what's bad about concerts is the whole not knowing and standing around and seeing all the opening bands or whatever. But we're adults, so we want to go to a nice restaurant and watch the Get Up Kids and go home. And I've got a babysitter on the clock too.
Right.
But I didn't even talk to any of this about Dan really, but he's super efficient minded too. So Dan, we were going at 6:30. Dan has us meet him at the interstate. Not pick us up at the house. So me and Bridget got a Reach Now car and drove to the Northgate entrance ramp and stood on the entrance ramp. So Dan Koch got off and picked us up, came on. And this is all planned out with a reservation at 7. And this is all planned because I texted Matt Pryor and got the exact set times. And then I had Josh send me a photograph of the set time so he would know exactly what time to make the reservation so we could go straight in. As they were line checking the Get Up Kids, walk in there, watch the concert from a side stage or VIP area or soundboard, and have a drink, and then go home.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's just laser. Like, nobody else could have that information. I mean, you kind of can, but I mean, I literally get the exact set times from the club and the lead singer, verify it, and plan it all the way down to the minute. So the sitter comes, because the sitter, I spent $80 on the sitter, not to mention dinner.
You know
what I mean? So it's just, you know, it used to be if you had a concert to go to, that's what you would be doing that day.
Right.
Just like, what are you doing on Thursday? oh, I'm going to a concert. What else are you doing that day? I'm going to a concert. That'll be the day. You know, when you're young, when people are at your concerts, that's the only thing they had to do all week, I imagine.
Right.
And now
you have to do, you barely can fit it into your life.
Yeah. And I'm so appreciative and sympathetic to all the people that come to our shows I think the ticket price is $20, but they're spending a couple $100 when they come to our show. I mean, we don't get the money. Yeah. That's the bad part. We get a sliver of that 20, but they spend a couple $100 to come to our shows. I really appreciate it. By the time they get the sitter and go to dinner and, you know, pay the tickets. It's amazing. Or sad. Depending on what end of it you're on. But I'm sad. I'm glad I don't have to do that all the time.
The money, does it make you even a little sadder, too? Like, would your mom have...
My Lord. Oh, my
goodness gracious.
Joey. Just for the listeners out there, Joey has really been enjoying himself. Yeah. And he's really happy.
He's covering that mic. So
don't
hard.
Cover the mic.
If you're gonna laugh.
Why in the world would you not
recorded,
want people to hear you laugh?
Die laughing.
They only get to
funny,
hear it two or three times a year. you hide that from them.
No, I don't like when I have the giggles because I really have no control. But I do remember a science segment, and I think Matt used that as, or maybe I asked a question using getting the giggles. Like, that's so crazy how frustrated I would be at like kids' classrooms that I was teaching, and they have the giggles and I get like super mad frustrated. Of course they can't help it. Like, that's why it's called the giggles. It's kind of like this mysterious force that just wants to come out of you when you see something that tickles you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What tickled you? What were you going to
say? Yeah, what was the tickling agent here?
Let's hear it.
I just thought maybe it made Matt a little
mom
sadder.
Dead, and then you got
because
the unbelievable
his mom
giggles.
Can't move to Seattle ever.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So and I was talking about a music concert, and you thought Matt's mom is dead, and then got the unbelievable giggles.
Yeah.
Is that was that the train of thought? Is that how that went?
Like,
what am I missing from that, or is that pretty much it?
Well, when you started talking about babysitting, I immediately went to, we hardly
Mother
ever
death.
Pay for that because, no.
If you keep talking about Matt's mom dying, you're going to give me the giggles.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, it'll be just too funny to continue.
Let's just move on. Let's just move on because I don't want to get the giggles, the mysterious giggles, as you put it, this mysterious force that comes out of nowhere when you talk about people's parents dying. Get Devin on the phone. We're gonna have a riot fest here. Devin's mom passed away for Matt. This is gonna be funny.
Yeah, hilarious. So we got the. I was thinking about it when I started thinking about the money spent, though. I'm serious about this. The money spent is real generation to the GDP and the economy. If all those people spent like $50 to $100 or $200 just because the Get Up Kids came, that made me, first of all, the show was amazing. I mean, it was so awesome to see these 40-year-old plus men doing it. You know, like doing it and like being appropriate about it. They weren't pretending to be young, but they weren't lifeless. And that music has some energy, and it was really there. I was so proud that it's like, oh, this isn't just washed up this or that. It felt great. I mean, the crowd was old too, so they were a little dull, but it was great. I mean, it was so much fun. But it generates into the economy in a way that I never thought about that stuff we've done. I've never even thought, I don't know why, but I've never even thought about it. When I think about taxes and all this stuff, but I think about how much these bands and these things that you create, not having a job from an employer, but you go out and create something, how much that does to the economy is crazy. And I started trying to think about it, and I did not do comprehensive math, but it just occurred to me that Emory CD sales have generated, you know, $5 million to the GDP.
Good God.
And that's just our CD sales. And we didn't get any part of that money, but it was generated because of something we created into the United States GDP. And every time we go play shows, by the way, I'll use this time to tell you, we're coming to Texas in August. Emory, Sleeper, let's get that economy rolling, baby.
Hell yeah.
You know, go check it out on our website, emorymusic.com. But that's beside the point. We've done thousands of shows that hundreds of people spent hundreds of dollars at. and they paid the babysitters. And then and they bought the tickets. And, you know, our, it's crazy that some fraction of that has been able to, like, pay our I've been focused on the part of it that comes into my household account and pays bills or whatever, which isn't very much compared to the amounts of millions of dollars that we've generated. Maybe at least several, at least two-digit millions. I mean, it's like it's at least tens of millions of dollars we've generated from the band into the economy. It's pretty incredible. And all those indie bands out there, it's just amazing. Isn't that cool?
What, now, does that make you more sympathetic to, like, the multi-billionaire business owners that, I mean, they can say the same sort of thing, right?
Oh, I'm already extremely sympathetic to them. I mean, I'm not somebody who knocks rich people for creating awesome stuff. Jeff Bezos should be everybody's hero, not their enemy. I mean, that's ridiculous. I think the people who generate the most money are the ones that should have more money. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't mean, and I'll qualify that because I actually am probably leaning towards universal basic income. Different topic for another day. I think wealth inequality is a huge problem, and capitalism has some major flaws. But let me put a pin in that and just make the logical argument that if you were going to give somebody $5 million to use, that Jeff Bezos would be the best person to give it to.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He does the best with resources, and he should have more because he does more better things with them. Bill Gates is better with $5 million than you are. Who will improve the world with $5 million?
I would love to test that, though. I would love to test that. If somebody wants to give me $5 million and see what I do with it, I think you might be surprised.
So anyway, if anybody really just create, to me, it's all generation and creation, things that don't exist, and then they do exist. Now, of course, I don't think he needs more personal wealth to spend and live in a gated community like Guatemala and drive. You know, nobody wants wealth inequality where we all have to ride around in cages because we're rich and everybody else is poor. We don't want that. That's not good for anybody. So wealth inequality is a huge problem. However, the more people can create with resources, those are the people you want to have more resources.
Well, if you haven't helped Emory contribute to the GDP, like Matt said, we will be playing in August in Texas and in Little Rock and in Atlanta. And it's going to be a very fun show, like we said, with O Sleeper. It's going to be just really fun. So you definitely should come to those shows. And Matt and Toby and the BC podcast with Matt and Toby. Joey can't make it. I think Joey's at a wedding or something like that. But we're going to be doing the podcast and the Matt and Toby show at Joshua Fest.
Oh, shit.
July 20th through the 22nd. So many bands. Go check it out. Go to joshuafest.com. But if Joey's not going to be there, who better to ask Aaron Diello, the creator of Joshua Fest, all the hard-hitting questions? So let's do it, Joey. This is
Grilled with Joey Svensson. He asked the tough questions no one else would.
All right. Well, we have Aaron, and what is your last name?
Diello.
Diello.
Like, pretty much just Diello, yeah.
Diello.
Just say D, L, and O really fast together, and you got it.
Diello. Diello. Cool. So I see an MXPX shirt on you, and let me tell you a story, man. Like, back in the late 90s, I went to an MXPX 90-pound wuss show with my brother. And after the 90-pound wuss show, MXPX, they were taking a long time to get up there, and I found out that it was because the guy that was in charge of the Christian school saw Mike, like, smoking a cigarette, and he heard him cuss. And so he was unsure if MXPX was going to be able to play. Like, if you were in that situation, would you have said, hey, get your fat assholes out of here and quit cussing? Or would you have let him play?
I probably would have let him play.
You would have let him play? That's pretty cool and edgy of you. Do you think of yourself as an edgy person, like edgy, radical for Christ sort of thing? Hey, do you know that? Have you heard?
I wouldn't.
Have you heard Jimmy World's drummer's a Christian?
I did hear that. Didn't he produce one of, like, Crowder's records?
I don't
or something?
Know. That's badass, though, if you think about him being kind of in the secular music industry, but being a Christian is just kind of neat. So, is it true that Christian musicians? And remember, Christian musicians, everybody knows what I mean when I'm talking about that, but a Christian musician, they're creating music just like a secular musician. Is it true that some of them cuss? Like, I know they don't cuss in their songs, but is it ever something that they do behind the scenes?
I mean, don't most of us, I mean, I don't want to say it's okay or anything, but it tends to be kind of something that.
Yeah, I don't say fuck or shit or bitch. I don't say those words.
Okay. So, I mean, I will admittedly say I tend to drop a few words that, you know, I have a hard time enforcing the cussing rule around my house with my teenage kids because I tend to not lead by good example, unfortunately.
Awesome. Yeah, I don't need a preacher right now. We are talking the music industry. So tell me your festival's name. Is it Jeremiah Fest? Joseph Fest? What's the...
Joshua Fest.
Joshua Fest. Cool. I had a really close friend back in 2012 named Joshua. He died in a car accident.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. That's horrible.
That's cool, man. I just wanted to let you know, just kind of put those two together. So when is Joshua Fest?
It's actually new dates for us this year. So it's July 20th, 21st, and 22nd.
Nice.
Traditionally, it's Labor Day, but we decided to mix it up a bit this year and move it to mid-July.
And where is it this year? Y'all are changing locations as well?
No. Location's been the same for years. It's in Quincy, California, up in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. It's quite a drive from anywhere, but it's a full camping festival. So bring your tents, bring your RV.
Yeah.
It's part of the experience, really, with being out in the Sierra Nevada Mountains.
That is pretty cool. I noticed the lineup. You guys have definitely, I can tell you guys are striving to have some more Black people at your festival. So I just want to applaud you for that. And so just,
well, thank you.
Yeah. Good job with extra Black people. And, definitely. Let me ask you about this. When you go into a festival masterminding thing, at what point in the brainstorming session do you think souls for Jesus? And I'm hoping it's early in the process, but when do you guys start thinking about souls?
Souls for Jesus. So, I mean, I definitely, as a Christian, everything that I do should kind of point to that. For the festival, I want that to be, you know, something that's organic. I don't make that an agenda item. I make that an organic item, something that's genuine. Cause the last thing I want is kids coming to this festival and getting hyped up, making decisions that maybe necessarily they're not really sure what they're getting into. You know, I want kids to be fed there. I want kids to have seeds planted there.
So feed them organic food.
But I definitely
food.
Don't want them.
You said you want the kids to be fed on organic food. Is that what you meant?
No, I just want, you know, as far as developing a new relationship with Jesus, I want that to be organic.
Gotcha.
I don't want them to be fed an agenda. I don't want them to make decisions on hype. You know, I want them to come to the festival and feel like they're part of the Christian community and get fed spiritually, but not necessarily get it shoved down their throat or get so hyped up that they're making decisions that they're not necessarily going to go home and live out.
Gotcha.
I want them to get the foundation and get, you know, just kind of get those seeds planted.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, like I said earlier, good job on the additional African Americans in the lineup. Who are some other people that you guys kind of like to mention when you're talking about Joshua Fest and, you know, this will kind of get people riled up a little bit? Who are the first names that you like to throw out?
What do you mean by riled up?
You know, like, yeah, Joshua Fest, motherfucker, yeah, can't wait. Like that kind of riled up.
Oh, man. So the hardcore kids are pretty excited. We've got, you know, Silent Planius and Phineas and Project 86, Comrades, Deathbreaker. So we've got
do you remember that band Plank Eye in Tooth and Nail put them out, Plank Eye? Do you remember them?
Plank Eye?
Yeah,
don't question my Plank Eye line because I am a diehard Plank Eye.
Gotcha,
fan.
Me too. Did you know that their name came from the verse where Jesus says, "Don't point the speck out in somebody's eye. Look at your plank in your own eye first." Did you know that? That's where I just found that out. I've been listening to Plank Eye since the mid 90s, and I was like, Plank Eye, that is such a unique. And I was reading the Bible the other day, boom, and it just, I could not. Did you know that?
I did. Yeah,
that's cool,
I'm stoked you discovered that, man. That's good for you.
Are you into the earlier Christian music scene too? Like, I actually noticed some names on there that I don't think your typical people would notice, like Steve Hinalong. I was surprised that he's even alive. I think the choir, they've been going on since like the mid 80s. Did you get into the choir and that sort of thing? Am I speaking your language?
So I was a 90s kid. I was definitely like raised on Tooth and Nail stuff, but gotcha. Their Speckled Bird album in 94 came
so
out.
Good.
I own that, and I played that over and over and over again.
That's awesome. Well, Aaron Delio, this has been awesome, and it's where can people find where can people find Jeremiah Fest?
Joshua Fest.
Joshua Fest.
You can find it at joshuafest.com, pretty simple.
joshuafest.com. Well, from what I understand from a lot of other people, because I didn't really get this out of the interview, you guys are doing some really awesome things, so I appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Appreciate your time, man.
All right, Joey, thank you for doing that interview. When I heard Grilled, I thought surely this is a cooking show. If Joey has a show called Grilled, it's got to be a cooking show, right?
But instead, it was just the best hard-hitting truth fact-finding interview I've ever heard. I'm really I love this.
Yeah, it was fun.
I'm excited to hear more. I hope you do more of these.
So we got Joshua Fest for real, though. Toby, tell them again that Joshua Fest date. Let's reiterate one more time. We'll be there. We hope it's real fun. We've been to that festival a bunch of times.
Yep, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd in California. It's gonna be so fun.
Joshuafest.com. All right, we are gonna talk to Costi Hinn in a couple of minutes here, and he is the actual nephew of Benny Hinn. And that he's left that ministry. He grew up there, and we're going to hear all about his story of leaving that and what he thinks about his uncle now, and I expect fireworks. I think it's going to be really good. But before we get to that, I got to tell you what you need to eat for supper, because I want to tell you what to do in your life. I don't usually do that, but in this case, I'd like to be the authority over you and command you to try Blue Apron, because you're a crazy person if you hadn't tried it already. This company's just been working really, really hard, and they're dominating, and they've been changing things continually to improve it the whole time they've been a sponsor, and I appreciate that very much. They focus on convenience and variety. They deliver fresh, pre-proportioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door, and it can be cooked in under 45 minutes, and the menu changes every week based on what's in season and designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. Here's some new stuff that they've got right now. They've got some cool recipes. They have Chrissy Teigen's garlic and soy glazed shrimp with charred broccoli and hot green pepper sauce. That looks great. And so Chrissy Teigen's teamed up with them to do some interesting stuff. And another one is her sesame chicken noodles with bok choy. And I'm telling you, bok choy is my favorite green vegetable, and you'll love it. You will love it. So Blue Apron is super flexible, a super high quality. They send only non-GMO ingredients and meat with no added hormones whatsoever. This is what you need to do, is check out this week's menu. And here's the best part. You get your first three meals for free if you go to blueapron.com/badchristian. That's all you got to do. blueapron.com/badchristian to get your first three meals for free. All right.
One thing that comes up a lot on this podcast is we've been brought up in very Southern Pentecostal environments, but kind of our world lens is through evangelicalism. And I think that we all sense whatever it means to get out of that is kind of what we've been doing. And I think a lot of the stuff that comes up are the things behind the scenes that people just don't realize that's going on in churches. And then you have a lot of people that are just like, well, I thought that I could push back against, or I never thought that I could say anything against that. Sometimes I'll use Benny Hinn as an example of a guy that possibly had, like, if there's a spiritual enemy, possibly has opened up the door for a spiritual enemy to take over his ministry. Just because when I watch it sometimes, I seriously think the word evil. When I see the sorts of stuff that he does, and it seems like lack of humility and everything, that's where my mind goes. Like, this is dishonest. This is creepy.
Or at the very least, misguided. Terribly misguided, maybe.
Yeah, it's actually comforting to hear your guys' background, because I talk with some people, and they look at me, and the eyes are glazed over, and they're going, it was that bad? Or like that, you really think that something could be, and I usually use could be, like you did, just could be demonic or could be something that's out there that's not good. And people are they haven't lived the way we have and been in that world. And so often they really don't understand just how evil things are behind the scenes. Mm. And then the other compartment is personal, which is, I love my uncle like crazy. He's my blood relative. I want him saved. I want him to repent. I want him to
You think of him as not saved? Doing.
And I do, yeah, guys, because you can't have the Holy Spirit in residence in your life, which we know biblically, if we're saved, we've got the Spirit of God in us, and he don't do roommates. So you can't be doing things that are so outlandishly, they're evil doctrines, they're abusing people, they're false teachings about Jesus. And having been on the inside, I kind of, that would be that part. You can't, I don't believe you can have that and then be a Christian. Cause those things aren't just, hey, I struggle once in a while with sin, or, hey, I say the wrong thing. We all sin, but a habitual ongoing deception of people is what I see when I see Peter's words in 2 Peter 2, or when you see what Jude describes, or when 1 John talks about just this ongoing habitual sin. It's the kind of the I don't care lifestyle. I'm going to do me, mm-hmm. but it's labeled, you know, Christian. So, yeah, I view him as an unbeliever and a false teacher, and I want to reach him. I view him as an evangelistic project. And in the category, remember Jude in verses 22 and 23, he says, have mercy on those who are doubting.
Yeah.
And then he says, save others, snatching them from the fire. And then he says, on others, have mercy with fear, right. hating even the garment polluted by the flesh. He's saying there's an arm's length group that you're going, I have mercy on you, but man, I'm scared mm-hmm. for you.
Yeah.
So that's where I have my uncle.
So right he now. Knows or knows not that he's a false prophet.
Let's get that in the middle, but can we start? I really want to start with just talking about the real details of the financial stuff and what that is like. That's such a fun topic. We make fun of, you know, it's a real easy thing to make fun of pastors and money and having too much money and all that stuff. But the Benny Hinn thing and that level is just, that's an insane level of money. And you've been a part of that and live that lifestyle. Even apart from theology, tell us about that lifestyle. Give us a picture of that.
And real quick, you've made me comfortable now that I can call your uncle maybe evil. So yeah. I appreciate that.
We'll get to that part where we want to hear the details about you and him. I'm really curious about your falling out with him because you were totally wrapped up in that lifestyle.
Yep.
Okay, well, tell us what it's like. Most people can't imagine.
I want that lifestyle.
In the lifestyle, let me break it up into two different eras. So growing up in it and then working in it.
Okay.
First, growing up in it was like being a kid and your dad or your uncle and your family own Disneyland. And so you have your run of the place. We had, you know, vacations at the nicest hotels in the world. We were picked up by drivers. It was like the royal family. So we had an entourage of cars. We'd have, you know, the lead car, a chase vehicle full of security. And these guys were ex-Marines, ex-NFL players. It was
this
like
is everywhere
celebrity
you go?
Entourage. This would be when we traveled with Uncle Benny. Mm-hmm. That was how we rolled. When we were at home, my dad did this in Vancouver up at our church that we grew up in. So we had a 10,000 square foot mansion, our own. It's actually just under 10,000 square feet, to be accurate. We had like some like 8 bathrooms. I had gold fixtures in my bathroom. I was 12 years old. And I had a bathroom that looked painted at the Ritz-Carlton. So I'd like sit down jacuzzi, stand up shower, a step to get in my bathtub. I was 12.
Oh my gosh.
Turning 13 as we moved in that house. So we drove nothing but Benzes, and that was like the minimum.
And for context too, for our listeners, I was reading where you felt like every day you offered Thanksgiving, like you felt like you were where you needed to be and that this was God's blessing and that where you were at in life. And maybe this is when you were a little older, but you felt, no, this is something to be very thankful for. Like I'm on the right track. I'm right where God wants me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had that feeling growing up. And then also when I was working in it, because there were times when I questioned because people would make fun of me at school. Like let's say, and granted I deserved it, right? You're a pastor's kid. You're rolling up in a Benz and you're wearing clothes, you know, people are looking at you like, what are you doing?
You had the original jams.
Yes.
And were your so parents were your parents encouraging this? Like, were your parents saying you got to drive this car? You need to get this expensive clothes as well. Like, it's part. Were they thinking image or
they? So that was their lifestyle. So growing up in it, that's all we knew. Right. Like when we turned 16 and got our license, we drove the Benz. So that was just what you did. Right. And then our home was just evidence of the way we were blessed. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you're right. When you said, did you think this was good or you thought this is like the way to go? Yeah, we were thanking God all the time for his blessing. Always prayers were never very submissive to the will of God per se. That would be bad to say, oh Lord, your will be done. We didn't pray your will be done. We already believed God's will was health, wealth, happiness. So all we would continue to ask for is his favor, his blessing, his goodness to continue to pour out into our lives, and then teach that to other people and say, look at our life. Look at all that we have. That's because we are faithful. That's because yeah. we give bountifully and we reap bountifully. And that's because we have the favor of God. If you want that too, come forward. We're going to anoint you and the power of God's going to touch you. And we want you to give a sacrificial offering just like we have so many times before. And then God is going to flood your life with abundant blessings.
Were y'all super focused on running the business and getting more money, or did it just seem automatic that there was just money everywhere?
Great question. We focused on getting more money because what would happen, and this is, I don't know if this is true for every prosperity preacher. I know some of them that we were personally friends with were rolling in it and never ran out of money. Mm-hmm. We had really wild spending habits. So we would blow through a ton of money and then things would need to tighten up. And like, for example, my uncle's CEO would call him and say, listen, here's the financial report. This is where we're at. And then I would watch as my uncle turned the dial up on fundraising at the next crusade. Mm-hmm. So lifestyle, it's like yikes. When, you know, young guys get drafted into the NFL or in the NBA yeah. or wherever, and they get a $5 million signing bonus and they got a lot of money. But how many stories do we know? If you watch like ESPN 30 for 30, these guys blow through cash like crazy and then they got to go get more. Mm-hmm. That's how we were.
So it sounds to me like the whole thing is you reduced whatever it was that you might have been doing, even if it was good intentioned at some point. It wound up that the calculation was the more dollars equal the more blessing, which means it was the validation that you were doing the right thing that you could get more money. Therefore, anytime you had to drive more money or take more pennies from old ladies, it didn't matter. That was still evidence that you were doing the right thing. So no matter how aggressive or greedy you get, it was completely unchecked.
Yeah, we justified it by saying that we're giving them something money can't buy. We're giving them hope and we're giving them healing. And we're giving them our anointing because our real belief was that we were this anointed heritage. My dad and I used to talk about it all the time in our father-son conversations. My uncle used to declare it as well. But basically, I was taught from a very young age, do you even understand, Costi? We never want to take this for granted. Do you understand that you are the nephew of the most anointed man of God wow. to ever live?
Gosh.
The greatest. I know, guys. That's what we were taught. And anytime you would badmouth it or, holy for example, cow. I'd get made fun of at school and I'd go, my dad's from the Middle East, speaks Arabic. So I'd call him Bubba. That's and Bub was for short. And I'd say, Bubba, you know, the kids are making fun of me at school. Why does Uncle Benny have to wear the white suit and do the, it's kind of crazy. Like couldn't we do it a little more? Like you don't wear a white suit, you know, why can't it be, tell him to wear a suit like you, the normal suits. They're making fun of him. And he would say, Costi, the judgment of God on those people will fall so strongly because they're touching the greatest man of God walking our planet right now.
Holy your uncle. Cow.
Don't be ashamed.
And he believes this.
Don't be ashamed.
And that's what he truly believes.
I'll put a D on that because I'll get to that towards the end. My dad believed that mm-hmm. wholeheartedly.
Can you imagine
and it
that?
Only is now.
The thing about if you were, what that message that sends to you, like the fact that he's telling you that these other kids are going to receive God's judgment just because they made fun of the man's suit.
Yeah.
Now, what would you be bringing upon yourself to question your Uncle Benny at that? You know what I mean? Like, that implicit message is pretty terrifying.
It is. And I would even change your word implicit to explicit, because it would turn to an explicit imperative saying, now, Costi, understand this. Don't ever speak against or about a man of God. Whoa, don't talk about. So it would go from implicit, like God's judgment, and they better be careful, to an explicit, do not ever do that, because that is why. And he would name people. And my uncle would do this too. It's a classic fear tactic or gag order, like the mafia, basically. He would name people that had died in our congregation. Wow. Or who had left our church, and there was a choir director. You know how church is. People, we're Christians, but we're sinners. We have church conflict, and the worship leader leaves, or the associate splits and takes 80 people and starts his own church. That stuff would happen. And one of those choir directors, actually, she got a tumor and died of cancer. And the story spread so quickly, and we were part of spreading it in saying that she had left our church, gossiped about my uncle and my father, and the judgment of God came upon her through cancer, man. And she reaped what she sowed. So that was so explicitly stated that any time, like we had my uncle, and you guys probably have seen the stories maybe online or in the news from back in like the 90s or early 2000s, my uncle had some security guys who died, and one guy overdosed, another guy had a heart attack. Those stories were used to put fear in the current staff members and the partners and followers that if you speak against Benny Hinn Ministries, God will strike you dead. Touch not the Lord's anointed, which David used to basically say, yeah, I can't kill a monarchical king in the lineage of Israel. I can't kill Saul.
Right.
But it wasn't that you can't speak
about.
Don't
make fun of a suit. Right. I love this because we're talking to someone who loves Benny Hinn. I love the fact that we're talking to you and not just another third party that sees stuff. Like, you love him. Do you think that there's something deeper, like in your uncle, that knows in the back part of his mind, I know I'm being controlling, that can't be good, but it just comes with the territory. Like, is there anything deep down inside where he's like, that can't be good, but maybe better for the greater vision of God? Or do you think it's just completely 100% innocent? This is what needs to be done, and I am doing this for God's glory. It's about God. It's not about me.
No, I can't speak for any other individual past a certain point, and we all know that, but I can say this. From experience, from being with him, from growing up in this family, from teaching this stuff and buying into it and all of that, I can say with 100% integrity that it's not innocent. That there are very small, and I want to say that twice, very, very small instances where I think my uncle and a lot of these false teachers believe that what they're doing is noble, and the end justifies the means. Mm-hmm. So we're giving people hope, so it's not that bad, and we justify it, which everybody knows if you lie to yourself long enough, you'll start to believe it. So that's that. Very small amount is that. But the majority of what has gone on and what still today is going on is not innocent. And I've watched us knowingly deceive people. And then my grandmother, who passed away a few years back, I watched my grandmother in Arabic scold my uncle and say, stop it. Stay away from this person. Why do you have this lady on your show? Why are you spending time with this person? Why are you hanging out with this guy? This man, my grandmother, in her broken English, she'd mix it with Arabic. She'd say, this man, no clean to Holy Spirit. She would say in broken Arabic, this man, no clean to Holy Spirit. And what she was basically telling my uncle is, stay away from these guys. Why are you teaching that? Why are you having him on your show? And why is it all about money? Stop it, my son. Stop it. And, you know, you're talking the oldest boy in the Hinn family and an old grandmother. Those are moments where you're just watching as a nephew going, right. This is like behind the veil of the family. They're trying to get him to stop doing certain things to a certain degree. So, I completely believe and have seen him do things he knows were absolutely wrong.
And I'm still caught up too. I want to make sure our listeners know, like, because it's really interesting to me. You grew up in this, so you were flying on the Gulfstream jets, right? Like you were getting like treated almost as royalty, or like was he like the mafia head or something? Like he's almost like he's the Don. He doles out the money, and you're really well taken care of, so that you don't push back and you do the right things and you say that loyalty thing, right? Like one of the things you said in there too is like you were. I want to get to it. Just tell us a little bit more about all that money.
How about as an adult when you were participating, not as a kid? Now you're in it, flying on the jets, doing what?
Yeah. So let's jump forward. I started working baseball down in Texas. I wanted God to open the doors for me to get into the big leagues and all that. Like every kid, I wanted to play in the majors. And the way to do that for me was to sow a seed of faith and put God first. So I sowed a seed by working for my Uncle Benny. I was submitting to him as the anointed man, and God would give me favor, etc. So I go to work for him, and when I was a little, like probably 16, 17 in that range, it was a G3. Then it was a G4. And so he was, because basically the prosperity preaching totem pole is measured by your airplane. So you've got like Jesse Duplantis just recently, right? Telling everyone I need another plane. It's his fourth. And the goal is eventually, I don't know, to fly like an Air Force One level plane. I don't know what these guys want to do, but it was like G3, G4, G5. The goal was to simply climb the ladder and have the nicest plane out there. So when I was working there, we're flying on a Gulfstream. Then we got the G4 and we would fly, and I'll never forget it. My uncle has all Louis Vuitton luggage. And so I got Louis Vuitton luggage, and we would shop at Versace, like just nothing normal. Like we never went to Kohl's or Ross or Marshall's or whatever. Everything was just designer. So you got everything at like D&G or Prada or Gucci or Versace. And you just did, that was normal, like where you go get your undershirts at Versace. So then on the plane, we had our own flight attendant. He was a man, an Italian guy who I knew growing up, wonderful, you know, loving, happy-go-lucky guy that was just excited to serve my uncle and was loyal to him. And he would come up to me and say, "What do you want?" And I'd say, like, "I want lasagna." "Okay." And lasagna would come out. Nice. And get bagels. And you just live like a celebrity where you tell people what you want and they do it. We were always nice to people, but you get whatever you want. And then, you know, your last name just is synonymous with anointing. So everyone's, in a weird way, they're reverent, but they're scared, but they're paid. Yeah. So it is like the mafia.
And it's worked for the masses as far as like the signs and wonders. Like there are super, so I'm a pastor at a church in the South, and there are super smart men and women that, you know, on one hand, they are super helpful, super supportive, can think through strategy and be creative and all of that. But then on the flip side, if you get to talking about Benny Hinn, they're like, "Well, I mean, of course he's God's anointed. I mean, look at the stuff that goes down, like at his places."
Like your peers do that.
Yeah.
Like your actual peers now it's an older generation,
but right. Still, they're just like, "Of course he's anointed. Are you kidding
me? Why would God be blessing it so financially well?" You know, like that's...
So I have I've always felt this weird feeling about money. Like I'm way in the camp of more money, more problems, although it doesn't sound like you got a lot of problems there, or we're not to them yet. But to me, I'm really curious about something else behind the scenes there. And that is, I cannot imagine having unlimited wealth and have not been able to, I don't know how, a better way to say this, but if I was rich, I would want to just be wild and party and have fun with it. And I'm thinking, how do you be rich and do this upright Christian thing where you can't have any fun? Like, was there hidden fun?
Did Benny Hinn have some fun?
Well, what about you? Like, even your name, your last name probably made people want to hang, you know, women, men wanted to hang out with you. Probably.
I mean, were you maintaining an image, or did y'all have to be rich? I mean, it sounds like hell to me to live in a super uptight Christian lifestyle and be rich. That sounds like hell. Or were you more loose, and did you drink? Did you have fun? Is there anything fun about it, or is it just massages and fancy bags and, you know, pampered life?
Yeah. That's a really fair question, and we're younger guys, so I think that's a natural question that we're going to bring up. So without glorifying the sin, I don't want to at all. I'll tell you how I lived. I drove a Hummer, an H2. By that time, I was working.
This is how many years ago?
TVs in it. 2004, 2005, 2006. I drove the Hummer all the way to 2010. Mm-hmm. So in that range, after 2003, I graduated high school right into this. So
good job not trading it in then, super early for a new one. Good job.
Yeah. My dad at that, I didn't need to. My dad had landed an F430 Ferrari during that time. Wow. I played with that. We had more Benzes. We bought a second home in Orange County, California. It was to a mile and a half down the road from my uncle. So just that, there was a lot more. Yes. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, yes, we lived a double life. Now I'm not saying my uncle was out with us because he's too high profile. He wasn't, but we partied wildly.
Well, that makes me feel a little better, actually.
I can understand that.
We use the money, we use the relationships with people, we use the name, the being well known to get into places, to do things underage, to buy whatever we wanted, to hang out with whoever we wanted. So the younger crowd kind of, you know, in my family and all of us who worked there we knew how to live with money and be wild and be young. Whereas my uncle, to be honest, from everything I know, he loves money so much that for him, his presidential suite, his image, mm-hmm. I think what Paul describes in 2 Timothy when he says, you know, men will be lovers of self, that I think to a degree, I'm not accusing him much further than that, but he loves his image. He loves his lifestyle. So he couldn't afford to because his image would be tarnished, but okay. He doesn't want to go out and go to clubs and go hang out with prostitutes and be crazy that way. His is a love of money. So it's mm-hmm. a status. It's an image. It's very celebrity-like. He wants the power.
Right.
For
him, would be beneath him, right? Like going out to a club or something. He's not going to chance anything. That's beneath him. He's above that even.
Absolutely. Yeah. He'd say that's foolishness. And he doesn't drink and he wasn't being wild at dinners. He was very, very cautious of his image like a celebrity would be. But he likes the accolades, the attention, the power.
And behind the scenes publicly, is there any known marital infidelity or divorce or anything? I'm not positive.
Yeah, you'd almost expect there to be some sexual outcome or thing. Really?
Like, has he ever been busted? I mean, obviously, just, you know, public knowledge sort of stuff.
Well, everybody knows about the National Enquirer picture and the other news reports when he was holding hands with Paula White and they were in Rome. So that's kind of, you know, common knowledge to have seen them. They were literally holding hands. And then they both got on their platforms, right, and said, no, we're just friends. That was nothing. So I'll leave that to the public to discern and decide what, you know, Benny Hinn and Paula White holding hands means.
Yeah.
And then go from there. The other thing would be there is not yet any known public, sexual scandal mm-hmm. with him, but I don't know what will come out in the 5, 10, 20 years after he, goes into eternity, wherever his eternity will be. Right now, I believe his trajectory to be away from God. So that, I hope, changes before he dies. But there is, I'm sure, and I know this for sure, things that are signed when you work for a ministry like this. Mm-hmm. This is common now, right? A lot of people do this. A lot of big companies and big ministries do this. You need to sign you have non-competes that you sign. You have all sorts of non-disclosures. You have things that you have to sign. And so there are a lot of things that I imagine would come out one day after he passes. I don't know about all of them personally. Right. I'm sure people know more than I do even. But as of right now, employees leaving that area and all that, they'll they're probably signing something or keeping people
just,
quiet.
I mean, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I just cannot imagine that somebody could literally believe that they're the most anointed man who ever lived and then have a normal sex life. I just don't buy it. Yeah. I just don't believe that's possible. And I have no idea in between this and
especially
the other
with
thing,
the lavishness of the money.
Yeah, it just makes, you know, from anything you know about anybody with power ever, that just does not add up. It just, it'd be hard to imagine. But that's all, I mean, no disrespect there, but I don't know anything.
No, and none taken. And I just will leave it at not arguing with you or even debating that. I agree. I completely agree.
Would you be?
And the Bible even describes that. So,
was there ever times where like something was going around? You're like, is this going to hurt our ministry? Are we in trouble? Did you ever feel that like nervousness? Really?
Absolutely. So, when NBC Dateline did their documentary or their kind of whatever they call them, the 2020 type stuff, when and I forget all the networks, but another one that sticks out is CBC. Canadian Broadcasting Corporation did the Fifth Estate, and they did a thing. When the news organizations go on the hunt, we would get pretty nervous. We would all watch it, and you know, my dad and my uncle and others would say, you know, I can't believe they're attacking us like this. This is so typical of Satan, always using the news to attack us, always using the world now to paint us in a negative light so that people will not believe, they won't support the ministry. Satan's trying to bring us down. And so we would start to pray that the Lord protect us, preserve the ministry. We would get really,
so there's
really
a, there's a certain
praying
amount
for basically
of,
more money though.
There were a certain amount of scandals that are non-disclosures and things, and ones that were maybe near misses that were avoided, it sounds like. So how did you get out of this? How did you wake up? And then the second part of that question is, how do you go from that rich to not being it? It'd be so easy.
Before we get that, can I add one more thing? I want to talk about how you get out of it, but I really want to ask one more question about just the ministry side. We've been talking about the money, but that healing you touched on there, you were a part of that, right? Didn't you say like when you were a catcher or something like when people passed out, you were catching them and there was like people thinking they were being healed. Did you see like what? What was the explanations there? And this might even been one of the causes that led you out of it. We can go into that too next. But like you, they are saying, and Benny Hinn's ministry is, come here, you will be healed. We're going to, he's going to touch you and knock you out. He's going to blow his coat past your face and you're going to pass out. I mean, all that, is that all set up? Is any of, there's no real spirit moving there, is it?
So I was a catcher. Yes. My job was to catch the people that fall. I
and
was
it paid well,
there.
Right?
I was a personal assistant.
You had the outfield.
It probably paid as good as a Major League Baseball catcher.
You can only get to G3 if you're a catcher.
Oh, yeah,
you
that's had, right. Yeah.
You got it.
There's a limit.
All right.
On
so, yeah, my job was to like wear a nice suit and catch people. And then I was his personal assistant when we were not at the services. So I'd carry his Louis Vuitton briefcase and check us in out of hotels and just help. That was, you're paid well to help and be around. I don't even, again, like an entourage. So that's one part. Second, there were a lot of healings that just weren't real.
Were any of them real? Is it all fake?
I don't believe that any of them, I never saw a real healing.
Okay.
Wow.
So I don't believe I really ever.
Is that crazy? Yeah. I just commented, you're his nephew and you've never seen a healing. Yeah. You were right there.
Yeah, and and that's coming from a guy who I believe that God heals. I believe people get healed today. I believe that God is a supernatural God and can still do miracles. He can do whatever he wants. He's God. I don't remember ever years seeing a genuine healing that matches what my Lord healed like and what the apostles healed like and what the new – because the Bible, if that's our objective – baseline for what it's all going to look like, you know, people coming up and limping across the platform is not a healing that looks like what was in the Bible. Or when they put up a ton of wheelchairs on the stage and the wheelchairs look like the wheelchairs that you'd see at the stadium that were there as a convenience for people. And then but you don't know where the people are. There's no one up there. There's just wheelchairs. And then they take pictures of it and post that online and go look at all the miracles. things didn't add up. And then also people would be rejected in the healing lines just asking for prayer. So let's say, you know, I remember being younger and there was blind people would always get like pushed away because they're blind. It's like impossible to fake that healing or you're going to get busted up there. It won't look as good. And the only people that get on the platform, you guys will know this if you studied it, I'm sure you have, the only people that get up on the platform more often than not, if every time, are the people that are testifying of a healing. You don't get up there to get prayed for and everyone believe God with you and they pray for you and then, you know, because that's too much pressure. What if it doesn't happen? My uncle doesn't want to look bad. So
yeah, I think 2020 did a special on that.
That's right. And that you get on the platform by being vetted and looking excited and selling basically that you got healed. My dad ran one healing line. Another woman ran the other one. And basically you have a lot of stories of people that their little girl with cerebral palsy or their son was blind or a woman with a tumor. And they just want to go get prayed for. They legitimately believe and they just want someone to pray with them in faith. And they're turned away and told, and I've seen it because I've been down there, the healing lines, told, sister, you just go on believing. You go back to your seat and you wait for the power of God. It'll hit you. You just go on believing, sister, and the Lord will do it. When he does, you let us know. We're ready to believe God with you. Praise the Lord with you.
Would you put it past your, before we move on to, would you put it past your uncle to like kill someone? if there was someone that was had the ability to shut the ministry down by revealing something, would he in his head justify it by saying, well, this is an enemy of Satan and I've got to do something? And or would like, well, answer that one and then I've got another one. I know these are extreme questions, but
no, these are good questions. I have received, and I don't know if it's from my uncle or not, so that let's preface with that, but I've gotten death threats both physically and from divine judgment from people who had refused to identify themselves, block numbers, all that, saying, if you don't stop doing this, God's going to kill your children or kill you, God. Or I will, and like all that. And so I've gotten that. And so there, I hope not, but right.
Would he change
his... You never know what people would do these days.
I mean, that's just like a mafia boss, though. It might not be coming from him, but there could be a connection here, there. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to... I mean, he probably has...
Sure.
And, I mean, that is that scary to you? Like, I mean, that there are a lot of crazy people in the world, and there are people like, I love God so much that I'm going to hurt Costi for the gospel, because Benny Hinn's the good guy, and Costi's the bad guy. Yeah, is that scary?
It was initially. I remember one time talking with my wife and her and I kind of having a moment, and she asked me a very objective question and says, you know, is it really worth it? And it was very early. It was like the first, I think I'd written a blog article, and it was like so much Bible in the blog article that you'd be like, there wasn't much there. It was called God, Greed, and the Prosperity Gospel. And it was just a blog, and I basically contrasted the prosperity gospel, wild stuff, with what the Bible says about money. That's all I did. And it just blew up, and I got phone calls and threats, and my parents, and everyone was mad and all that. And my wife said, you know, is this worth it? And I said, honey, I've been quiet for 5 years. I'm a pastor. I can't sit in hiding all my life. I'm mandated by God via the scriptures to preach the truth and refute error, which means I got to do the fun job, which is preach the truth, and I got to do the really tough job, which is refute the bad stuff too. You don't need to major in just one. You got to do both, mm-hmm. and that's part of the job. So then she asked me again, but is it worth it? Like, has anyone gotten saved yet? Like, this is crazy. We're getting threats. At least like if you're a real, you know, you're out there doing some real thing and people are getting saved, then if you die, it's worth it. And I said, I don't know if it is worth it now or it will be, but I'm going to try to be faithful and we'll see where the Lord takes it. So I remember that moment and I was really scared that first week. I was very nervous and I thought someone's going to show up to church. I thought what's going to happen. And then over time, I started getting emails from people saying, you know, oh my gosh, I just watched that YouTube video and I've had questions for 20 years. And my pastor always told me that if I'm not getting healed, it's because my lack of faith and I may be an unbeliever. And then I saw the YouTube video and the Lord opened my eyes. I can't even believe it. Now I'm at this church and I'm reading my Bible and I feel like I just got saved. And I'd start to get testimonies from people. So I'd forward them to my wife and just say, you know, it's worth it again. It's worth it again. It's worth That's it good. Again. And we begin to see the Lord use it, not in a way that it's about us, but in a way that it's worth it because it's gospel and the Lord is using it however he wants. And so that's when I was just like, whatever. Okay. If something happens, fine. But I'm not going to sit silently, fearfully in a corner of Tustin in Orange County and hide. Mm-hmm. I'd rather go down for doing something that was honoring to God, knowing that eternity is much longer than this life on this earth. Mm-hmm. And then it is what it is. So I've always had that personality though. So I'm not saying everyone has to do that, but it's, to me, it's an all or nothing thing. I don't want to sit in mediocrity all my life because I was scared of my mafia uncle and some crazy prosperity gospel loyalist coming after me. I serve a big God. If something happens to me, somebody else will come after. And the Lord's going to do his work and save people. I just want to be a part of it for as long as he'll let me. So that's kind of my full robust answer to, there's crazy people. Yeah, we've had threats. But since when did that ever stop more faithful people than I've ever been from history, from standing up for truth?
Well, we skipped the part about how you got independent and out of that life. So we got to get that.
Yeah. I mean, it had to be hard. You're so rich and everything, had everything. It's hard to give that up.
Yeah. So my heart started to change and I started to question everything. And along at the same time came my wife. We met of all places. I was not really serving the Lord because I was living a double life. And so I went to a country concert with some friends and was just having a good time. And there I meet this gal and she's there with her sister and she was very proper and just this nice gal. My Hummer had died and we were tailgating and it had died. And so I needed a jump. And so I told my buddy, I'm like, I think I know how I'm going to talk to this gal. I'm going to ask her for a jump after the concert. And he's like, dude, you're crazy. All right, go for it. So I do. They offer to give me a jump. I meet Christine. Long story short, I find out she's a Christian. She goes to a Christian university and is getting to know more about the Lord. So I invite her to dinner. We go on a date. We talk a ton. Two dates later, she finds out who my uncle is. And she's like, so I have some questions. And she asked me really objective questions that I had never really been asked by anyone, but I had thought about. And that continues. Finally, my parents, to cut up some gaps, my parents are like, this girl's no good. She's going to ruin the anointing. She's skeptical about Uncle Benny and our ministry. She's got to go. And I was saying, no, I think she's the most clear person I've met in a long time. She's onto something with some of the questions about what the Bible says versus what we teach. That led me to question more than to study more about my word, God's word, and study my Bible. And then they tried to fix her. So they brought her to like an Uncle Benny service. It's on YouTube. I have a still photo of it in my in a folder on my computer. The camera caught my wife, and she's got her little hands in the air, and she's trying to do everything they told her to do, and nothing's working. She's not like getting tongues. She's not getting the anointing. She's not doing what they said she was supposed to do and feel if she was really one of us and called to be my wife. So it was a classic divine intervention where the Lord uses someone to intervene in your life. Mm-hmm. And I was up in Vancouver at that point. My dad's associate pastor. I told them I'm going to marry her either way. So, you know, get over it. So they decide, okay, fine. We'll accept her. We'll fix her over the years and get her a little more like us. And then I get a phone call from a church out here in California that we were going to when I lived out here. That was a little more mellow. And it was a church that was my wife, my girlfriend, she was my girlfriend at the time, had gone to as a church plant and said, hey, you should come to my church. Check it out. I'm not saying it's your churches are weird, but it's a little less like your churches. I'm like, okay. So I come and they preach the Bible and they're young and they've got a loud band. And I'm like, this is kind of cool. It's not as, no one's like falling everywhere. And No one's taking big offerings. They were doing a lot of missions. And I'm like, this might be a real church or something cool to check out. That church calls me while I was 2 months away from marrying Christine, going through major conflict with my family over their beliefs, what the Bible said and what Christine and I were starting to lean towards, which, like you said, kind of viewing my uncle in a more dangerous light, that put us out of the family. And they were going, you need to make a decision. Either you do this our way or, you know, you're out. And so the church actually offered me a youth pastor job from California. We left, got here. And to be honest, within about 4 or 5 months, the pastor said, hey, I need you to preach for me. I said, okay. He said, we're in the book of John. Your text is John 5:1-17, the healing at the pool of Bethesda. Here's a commentary. It'll help you keep the train on the tracks, you know, with all this stuff, but good luck, man. I'm going to be out of town. So go get them. And the commentary was a John MacArthur commentary, who is like, you know, if my uncle is Batman or the Joker, MacArthur is like Batman. They're like the ultimate nemesis of my uncle and that whole movement. And so there was, regardless of views on cessation and continuation and all that, his commentary work on that passage was very simple. It was that Jesus is sovereign in healing. And as I studied the passage before ever looking at the commentary, I started noticing this guy gets healed immediately. This guy was sick 38 years. And then the big one, when the Pharisees say, who healed you? Who told you you could pick up your pallet and walk? The guy goes, the man who healed me. And he didn't know who Jesus was. John says it so clear. It's undeniable. And I don't know why, except that God opened my eyes. I'm sitting in study, the same office that I'm in right now. And I went, huh? How did he didn't know who Jesus was. So I go, I got to see what the commentary says. So I look at that and he says it right there and says, you know, this debunks one of the cruelest lies of faith healers today, that if you just have enough faith, God will heal you. The man didn't even perceive the Greek word eido or eido.
I love that, man.
Perceive. And my goodness, like I didn't care if it was John MacArthur, who it was. I just knew, I think we were wrong. Mm-hmm. So I start crying like a, you know, baby in my office and I'm going, oh my good. You heal no matter what. You heal the way you want, when you want. You're not a formula. I can't control you. You're in control. You're God. Mm-hmm. I'm not. And everything, all the questions, all the things anyone had ever said to me just flooded in at once. I felt grace just flood my life. I repented for my sin. I promised the Lord I would serve him and be faithful with the gospel. I denounced everything I'd ever done. And all I wanted to know was more about this Jesus who was sovereign, who healed people who had faith, who healed people who didn't have faith, and could not be boxed in like the prosperity gospel taught me. And he wasn't just some formula to make money. He was God, and I was to submit and serve him. So that's when it started. That was like the big moment. And to give you a quick glimpse of the lifestyle, I went from like mansion, Hummer, living it up, Breitling watch worth $10,000, all the nice clothes, everything in the world, to a tiny like 560 something square feet apartment. My little son living with us. Our kitchen table was our vacuum cleaner box that we kept. We shared a car. We got rid of everything.
You were estranged from your family and cut off from the money at that point? Like you were not talking to your parents or anybody? They wouldn't.
Oh, I was talking to them. I was calling my parents all the time and saying, guys, I figured it out. Uh-huh. I'm telling you, I figured it out. All that stuff I used to question, I actually been studying. We were wrong, but now I'm not wrong because I'm actually on God's side. You guys are still wrong. You need to be right. I'm telling you, listen to this. Here's the study I did. God is sovereign in healing. We got to stop doing the money stuff. Like, and I know my life is probably boring and really unappealing to you because I have no money and I'm just a little pastor now trying to make it. But trust me, like this is the good side you want to be on and God will take care of it. You know, I'll be able to pay rent, but we got to stop false teaching. And they were like, you're off the rails. Christine ruined you just like we told you she would. The church you're at is wrong. You're ruining the anointing. Now you're going to be judged. You're attacking us. what are you doing?
And
what happened to you?
What's so awesome is you can fit anything into that narrative to support it. Like, basically, you're not doing it anymore, so your wife led you astray. I mean, if you're on their side, you can take anything you want. See, it's coming against the enemy. That's crazy.
Everything was to blame. And then, so I lost my title, my pastor. I became pastor in training. And then I got into seminary. And we got stripped of everything was just gone, and the Lord has continued to provide. Wouldn't you know it? He's the God who owns a cattle on a thousand hills. He can handle it. I don't need to preach prosperity to make it. And we have three kids, and we make rent. The Lord's gracious. We have a wonderful church, and we're joyfully serving the Lord.
You were able to flip your parents?
It's been a growth. Though. So here's what's really neat. We didn't talk for about a year plus, and I wrote a book this last year called Defining Deception, and did some YouTube videos, just the usual, like some interviews and whatever. And my mom started listening to them. Then she read the book, and just several months ago, we had a little kind of dinner powwow together. They wanted to get together, and my dad wanted to talk, and my mom just started bawling, and she said, like, it's been so personal because it's our family. But if I remove the personal side, like, you really meant all that, didn't you? Like, I read the book, I've watched the interviews. Was it really that bad? Were we really that wrong? And she was just crying as she was processing in her own mind. Like, and then she started saying this. She goes, Costi, I don't know. Like, do you think what will people say though? Like, they'll say that we deserve this now. Like, we, you know, cause she got a tumor and on her pituitary gland. Now a surgeon took it out and it ended up being okay. But she's like, people will just say that I got my tumor because I got what I deserved. And if your father and I, you know, change our lifestyle and we have nothing, people will say we got what we deserved. And what will people say? And my mom was beginning to go through the process of facing all that they did and how they lived, and come to a place where at that point we no longer have heated debates and a war of words. I'm no longer trying to change them or tell them they're wrong. Her and my dad both said, yeah, we did a lot of wrong stuff, and we're trying to figure out now what we believe and where we land. We know we want to serve the Lord. We're not sure how to go back and fix everything, but we're distancing ourselves from your uncle completely. And my dad refused to work with my uncle anymore. He walked away from that whole world.
Wow.
And
do they talk? Do you or them talk to him anymore?
So my uncle hasn't really talked to a particular circle face to face, like seeing each other since my grandmother's funeral a few years ago. But my dad has gotten from him as he yells it. He won't call me, but he'll yell. He called my mom one time too, yelling, saying, you know, what is Costi doing? Aren't you going to shut him up? Was the exact quote. Mm-hmm. Which is, again, why my parents would get frustrated with me sometime. Tired of getting phone calls. He won't call. Just, can you stop like doing whatever you're doing? Just be quiet. Go preach to your people there at the church and stop doing interviews or answering questions. And I said, no, as long as false teachers and Uncle Benny target the world through media, podcasts, video, books, and every other avenue, I'm not going to hide over here in Tustin. I'm going to do the exact same thing. And in the old days, when there wasn't that, you preached to your people and you said, hey, you stay away from the church across town there that's preaching prosperity. But with the avenue of media, use media for good as well. And so I tell my parents that, and they said, well, your uncle called and said, you know, when are we going to shut you up? And we don't know what to do with that. He's really upset, Cost. Can you just tone it down? And I said, no, just tell him to call me.
And it seems like if he really thought that you were a false prophet going against his ministry, isn't the right decision is just to let God take care of it? Like, well, you know, I mean, if you're in his position, you're just like, well, God will take care of me. Instead, he had to be on the attack, which shows to me that I think deep down inside he knows that you're right to some degree. But hey, I want to say hats off to you, because if I were you, I would have just done prayer ministry from the inside of that ministry and just stayed put and just prayed for that ministry just with all my heart every day and then take whatever pay. So good job.
Yeah, if I was you, when I was yelling at my parents and going, hey, you guys are wrong, I would have still grabbed a Rolex as I was leaving. I would have driven off in a Benz and sold that. I would have grabbed the Versace, anything I could. Y'all are all wrong. You, how dare you? I would have just kept grabbing things to sell. Because I mean, that's why I feel bad for your parents. Like, they actually... they did believe in what they were doing. I think they probably are culpable and do realize now, maybe even more so. But how hard is it later in life to give up that whole lifestyle?
Well, is it okay not being rich, though? Maybe it's not so bad. Maybe it's good. Maybe being rich is bad. Or do you miss that money?
For me?
Yeah. Like now you have a bill and a dentist bill with your kid. I mean, you have money stress now that you didn't have before. But
well, like I said, the Lord has provided for our bills. Like now, again, example being at what level you live. Now we're kind of getting into the biblical view on in a balanced view on money. My wife and I don't have iPhones because we found these it's called Republic Wireless or whatever. It works just fine. We pay $56 a month and we both have smartphones and whatever. And it's cheaper than having $100 a month iPhone bill, which for two of us is $200.
Right.
So the way we live, I learned about stewardship. I'd never heard stewardship was like, I give $100, God gives me 1,000, 100-fold blessing. It's crazy. I learned about stewardship, which is God gives you what he gives you, and he's given us the ability to work and gain wealth, which doesn't always mean riches, wealth or an increase, right? Just like you guys, you work hard, you do what you do. The Lord gives you the ability to work. And then from that, I'm a steward, I'm a manager. It's all God's money. So I can choose to live my life maxed out and barely make it, or I can choose to live a certain way and then I can pay the dentist bill.
Right.
So,
but you don't miss the lavish lifestyle though.
No, because it's too much trouble. Mm-hmm. It's so messy. You get caught up in stuff. The encumbrances and entanglements of the world latch themselves to you. That's why Jesus said, he didn't say it was impossible for a rich man to get into heaven, but what was his constant message? It's really hard. What will pastors tell you if, they sell 1 million copies of a book. They said, man, like John Piper's talked about it before and many others, they got to give a lot of it away because they don't want to be caught with $1 million in the bank and just kind of sitting on it, living it up. Having a lot of money is a huge responsibility and a burden because God will hold you responsible for how you use it. So there are people that are blessed with great wealth. They need to be a blessing to kingdom ministry. And there are people that are blessed, and I mean that, with a limited amount of wealth. And to be honest, that's a blessing too, because you don't have to be caught up in the constant entanglements of what riches bring. So we have never had more peace, more joy, and more fun, to be honest, than when I see my wife couponing or getting creative. Like that stuff isn't, we used to call that poverty mentality. When I grew up, it was, poverty, like you would be poverty mentality, right. you don't believe in riches. It's so much fun to say, okay, we trust God, here's what he's provided. And we can split all that up and use it. And then other times, if God provides, more or whatever, you go, all right, how are we going to use this? Like if tomorrow someone cut me a check for $1 million, I'd go, all right, so what orphanage are we building? What church needs help? What missionaries need support? And then, do the bad Christian guys need a lighting bill paid? Let's keep them on the air because they're a little crazy, but they do some good stuff too.
Let us know when the check comes.
It's that mentality. So having money is not bad, but man, is it tough not to get entrapped in it. Mm-hmm. So I don't miss that at all.
Your kids are going to be mad at you though. Dad, I wanted. What you mean? We could have had a Benz. All you had to do is play the game, Dad. That's man, all you had I'll to do.
I'll take over to the book of Proverbs. I'll say, look what Proverbs says. You work hard, you increase your wealth the way that God is honored by through your integrity.
Right. On.
And, if I can help you with college, I will. But I'll teach them the value of hard work and I'll teach them the truth. And prayerfully, they won't be mad. They'll be, thank you. Thank you, Dad.
Costi, this has been fascinating. Yeah, thank really you so much. Yeah. This is great.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
All right, Costi Hinn, that was, that. I mean, is everything I ever thought. it felt like it confirmed all the bad things I've ever thought in a way that was like, I felt like he was saying it just as information. He didn't even really come across like bad mouthing his uncle to me. I mean, right. It was, but it was more like, this is what happened. This is what is happening. And so for me, it was like, it was a little bit like confirmation. It made me feel a little bit better about myself because I've talked so much shit about people like Benny Hinn that I just want to be at least a little accurate.
I had the exact opposite reaction. I think after talking to Costi there, I don't trust that fella. I'm with Benny. I'm going to go ahead and support Benny on this one.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't like him singing all that mud. I mean, think about it.
Matt has signed up. Yeah. You've been planting seed since this interview.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I do love that when we shine truth on things, I love that we are able to have people like this on. And, you know,
listen how weird this is. Like, this is unbelievable. Think about the accomplishment of someone like Benny Hinn, because what I cannot get over is, like, growing up around the people that I grew up with, when you see acts of the Holy Spirit like that, there's no way you can discount it completely. You just can't, because you're not supposed to. You're not
right.
Excuse me. You're not allowed to. Whatever the case, but you just do not do that. And so now, growing up over time, I'm just like, you know, there's something fishy about this. And I guess you know, every ministry's got its bad parts, and nobody's perfect and all that stuff. Now I look at mass ministries, like everything Benny Hinn, I would call complete fraud. I mean,
you don't think there's any honest bone in his body? Like, he, you know, you can't say he doesn't believe in God. You don't know if he believes in God or not, like, or Jesus. Don't you think he probably believes in Jesus but is using it? Or you think he doesn't even believe that? It's just a business thing.
No, I think he believes, for sure.
I mean, you can be so deluded. I mean, you've seen people. I mean, just being around people and being, okay, I would just
delusional.
Say being at Mars Hill, you have Mark, who's the way he was. He isn't in any way aware of what he's like that's bad.
Right.
He is not. I promise you. He's not like the worst guy in the world.
You're still a fraud.
He's complete.
Yeah, you're still a fraud, though, right?
Well, I mean, fraud implies you kind of know it, like a con man in a way. Like, and that is true. I think Benny Hinn's a fraud and a con man. So, I think that power is so intoxicating that you just can't see. If it's a certain personality disorders that you can get into, I really don't think they're that aware of it. Like, it would be too. They can't possibly just know what a phony and fraud they are.
But I do agree with Joey to an extent. He does know. I think some of the stuff he still thinks. What I would think more is he does think he's a Christian. He does think maybe he's helping people to know the Lord, but he definitely knows it's about money, and he's going to do this thing and this knockout, throw my coat around, knock people out. He knows all that's not real. He does at least know that.
But he's a sick person is what I'm saying. It's easiest to see him as a sick person. Like, you know, they say Jaws, the shark, was like a disordered shark and went around killing people. I mean, it just, there's something wrong with it. Like, it's not just you or me being doing bad to get money. It's not like that. It's way deeper. Like, it's a disordered whole person. And I don't know, whatever.
Well, the main thing is, I love that this podcast shows the truth and it reveals the truth. And
absolutely.
I mean, I don't want it to stop there. Let's move right into some more truth. If that's
Gotta
okay
move.
With you guys.
Let's do it.
Sure. Which epistle are you going to go to?
Tobias. In a world where you started this kind of Christian thing yourself, and you're like, damn, Benny Hinn did it so much financially better than you did. Like, why couldn't I be a little bit delusional? Damn it. Why do I have to not be delusional and make less money?
Can't I be delusional? Of all the personality disorders one could have, the one where you get filthy rich, why couldn't I have that one?
I know. I got tons of delusion in my life. Right. Couldn't I at least have the one where my finances really excel?
Exactly.
Good God. All right. Speaking of truth here, I thought, okay, so I found this article before it blew up, and I don't know if y'all have heard about it or not. So, but this is, have y'all heard about the lady that threatened to call the cops on an 8-year-old girl selling water in San Francisco outside of their place?
Mm-hmm.
Have y'all heard about this?
Yep.
Uh-uh.
Okay, so I found this on Yahoo, and this is what
still
is interesting
on the Yahoo News. Oh my god!
Yep, it's on Yahoo News. It, some of us, but listen how. Let's see, what's the word I want to use here? Okay, when it's manipulative, I guess. Maybe that's not exactly the word. It's persuasive to make you immediately think something. The title of this news article is "White Woman Threatened to Call Cops on 8-Year-Old Girl Selling Water." Right? So that's the initial thought you have here is, oh, this white lady. That there's a connotation there, and it seems to be negative immediately, right?
Pejorative, for sure, no doubt.
Yeah, it's exactly right. All right, an apparent competition over who can threaten to call the police on people of color for no good reason is really ramping up. So here we go. They're immediately making this about race, right? This isn't about the lady. You don't know anything about this except for the first paragraph says people are calling.
Pause right there.
Yeah.
If you so far everybody's already made up their mind that's read that far. Agree?
Yes.
And
right.
No facts have been presented yet. Agree?
Not none.
Okay.
Zero.
Now go on with the if there's right. any facts. Let's
okay.
go.
Now, in a video posted to Instagram Saturday, a white woman in San Francisco was captured apparently calling the police on a non-white girl who, maybe that was the right way to say it. So there's only white and non-white.
Right. That's close. Yeah.
We have a so white bit, is yeah. still the one. White's everything, and then there's just non-white. Isn't that it's so bizarre?
Well, they're going to have Asian is the new frontier of how we're going to handle that particular
Yeah, race. You might that's, be right. That's you might another right. New story so there. A non-white girl who's 8 years old. The child's supposed crime? Selling water illegally. But the woman, Allison Edel, who spoke to Huffington Post later in the day, said that this was no racial. She said this has no racial component to it. The woman that was saying she was going to call the cops on the 8-year-old girl, and she claims that she only pretended to call the cops. This woman, the mother said, this woman don't want a little girl to sell some water. She's calling the police on an 8-year-old girl. The child's mother, who took the video, is heard saying, Edel is seen on the phone, then ducks down out of sight after seeing she is being recorded. Edel later told HuffPost that she ducked down to find a quiet place where she could hear the building security guard she said that she was speaking to. The mother said, don't hide. The whole world's going to see you, boo. Yeah, illegally selling water without a permit, she says into the phone. On my property, the mother responds. On my property, the mother responds. It's not your property, the lady says. The woman who shot the video, whose Instagram handle is Lady So Wavy, did not respond to a message seeking comment. Edel told HuffPost that the incident, which has left her feeling horrible and heart-wrenched, began because the little girl's mother was screaming. She asked the building's security to intervene, but they said they could do nothing. They were screaming about what they were selling. It was literally nonstop. It was every 2 seconds. Come and buy my water. It was continuous, and it wasn't a soft voice. It was screaming. Edel said she had the windows of her office open. When asked why she didn't close the windows, she said because it was too hot, and closing them wouldn't have really stopped the noise anyway. After confronting the girl and her mother, Edel said she was only bluffing when she said she was going to call the cops. The San Francisco police did not respond. I had been putting up with this for hours, and I just snapped. I have no problem with enterprising young women. I want to support that little girl. It was all the mother and just about being quiet. So, I mean, I just want to say, white women love quiet.
Yep.
Does it not? I mean, they need the quiet. White women need quiet. Guys. Am I missing something here?
Well,
no, I want to say something. This article wanted to make this racist. I actually don't believe this lady's racist. She ended up she's like the CEO of a marijuana CBD treatment for dogs and pets. And I think she might lose her job now, all this stuff. Imagine this. You're sitting in your apartment and you just hear somebody yelling over and over and over, and finally you just get mad. You go outside, and they say, no, we're not going to stop, and then you lose your shit, wrongfully so. This lady's wrong. She shouldn't have done it. You can't lose your cool on somebody, especially in front of an 8-year-old that's trying to make money. I don't know their situation, but I just want to give a little clarity here. Have you ever been in a situation where somebody was doing something and you lost it, and you just yelled at them? Now imagine that being videoed. If everybody that's mad at this lady had a video of them losing it when that person cut you off or shot you the bird or wouldn't shut up, turned down their music when they were your next door neighbor at your apartment, whatever it is, and you lost your shit, is that immediately racism because somebody is a different race than you? You can't. That's what I dislike about stories like this is this lady lost her shit. The bigger thing here is what are the rules? What are the laws? How can we help it's dumb that people can't sell stuff on the street or that you could even say this. I'm not defending this lady, but to immediately make this racism, a white woman and a non-white person, I'm just like, man, doesn't this set you up to think this woman is Hitler or right, something well, terrible, right?
You know,
she's the KKK. She's alt-right.
From my point of view, this lady is just the worst. Like, she's just the lowest, worst type of person that I'd like the least. I would go so far as to say she's worse than a racist. That's the way I feel about it. This is that gross, get people in trouble, passive aggressive, resentful person. I hate this lady. I think she's one of the worst. She makes me more furious than almost anybody. But I don't know if it's racism or not.
Hate's a strong word, Matt.
That's just I think it's a strong word.
It's a strong word.
The way that she's one of my least favorite types of people on earth.
Well, that's my bigger point. I'm not defending this lady at all. I think she's probably shitty.
Right. I'm saying she might be below racist.
And I've gotten in trouble a ton with women like
this. That article's terrible.
These are the type of women that
not fair.
Women and men that totally get me in trouble. I got into a huge argument one time because our bus got stuck in downtown New Orleans with this old white guy. And I was like, leave us alone. He was following us around. I was trying to get our bus out of downtown New Orleans. We took a wrong turn. It was an accident, all this stuff. These people are shitty. I agree. To immediately take the racist tone, though, I feel like that just sets everything back and you don't get real information. You don't even get to understand why this woman is shitty. Like, it's this whole thing where it's like
really
she's really bad.
For some real reasons.
Yeah. Right. I thought it was interesting the way this story in Yahoo was told.
Yeah, but
this is a definite narrative they told, not all facts.
And here's why it's so dangerous and wrong to do what Yahoo and every other media outlet does with stories like this. That lady had she was on Twitter trying to defend herself or whatever, and she should have deleted her Twitter. I mean, probably that's what you got to do when shit goes down these days. But she was trying to defend herself and stuff on Twitter, and then everybody started forwarding that conversation around, and then everybody doxed the shit out of her. And so you saw the vitriol and the way people think about her, like she's the worst person in the world and the worst problem in the world. And then there's whole pictures of her with graphics, with her name, phone number, address, and telling people, calling people to go harass her and hurt her. That's,
golly.
And these people just read an article like that and assumed this is the racist garbage that is ruining our country. So who knows, if we kill her, I guess we'll all be better. I mean, that's the mentality that the mob seems to carry with it. And I'm telling you, can you imagine the text messages that she got once her phone number is? And I'm talking about normal, reasonable people here in Seattle that I know that I'm sure are anti-racist and maybe well-meaning, forwarding even that conversation, that tweet around that contains multiple doxes and calls for violence against the lady. That's like a really, really misguided action. Let's just say let's just say Bridget was like, yeah, fuck that lady, I'll retweet how stupid she is. And then it's full of this doxing stuff. That's super not okay, super dangerous, and it's caused by the media clickbaity trying to do the thing that they're doing there, and it stirs everybody up, and it's destroying our country.
That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
Yes, destroy is the right word. Do you want to destroy somebody, their identity, their life, everything, or do you want to educate? And we got to start making that decision. That's what really bothers me about this. Nobody wanted to. If this lady was a racist, do you want to murder her? Or do you want to actually get real change? Which one? I mean,
kill. Kill. They say punch Nazi or something. But I mean, it's like harm as much as possible, however possible. That's the goal,
I
guess.
That sounds like the Nazi way of doing things.
Sounds like a medieval mob to me.
I mean, it sounds like a real dangerous, bad way to be that mimics what the people that you don't like or what they're doing wrong. Right. I mean, you don't become the thing that you want to end. Right. That never works.
We're all in the ditch. I mean, that's why I kind of blame Trump for some of this, because not for anything specific other than he acts like the worst human ever.
Right.
And then everybody else goes, watch this.
Right.
I mean, you know the thing where don't sink to their level? You ever heard of that?
I know.
Trump just caused 300 million people to sink to the level of one of the worst people in the country. Trump.
Right.
That's all he did. He just brought everybody down to his level, and now we're all rolling in the mud. It's unbelievable. The people are
the woman did something stupid. It might be an asshole. That doesn't mean end her. It just doesn't. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's no empathy or sympathy anymore. But anyway. All right. That's the damn news. I just wanted to light y'all up a little bit today and bring a little bit of truth.
A little flair.
a little flair today. I mean, it's really funny though. Nobody, the damn news is the only one reporting the truth. And I didn't want to tell y'all, but I'm doing AI news now. AI is taking over my news.
What?
Really?
It will.
Is your like we've talked a lot on this show about whether or not the Bible is inerrant.
Uh-huh.
Is the damn news inerrant?
I would say, yeah, you have to take the news literally, and it is inerrant. There's no every single thing was intentional and planned, and there's no mistakes.
It was Toby breathed.
Yeah, I breathed it in.
So if there's ever a time when it is Toby talking, will you uh-huh. do what will you do what Paul did?
Which is what?
You don't remember what Paul did?
No.
No, tell us.
He said, okay, now this is me, Paul.
Oh, he said that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
Versus
very cool.
The Holy Spirit. Okay.
Oh, I see. He says, yeah, no, this isn't it. The damn news. This is me, Toby, for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it like an aside from Toby? Like
would you do that?
I don't know if I could do it or not. One thing I would do, though, is join the BC Club if you haven't.
You got to.
I mean, if you haven't joined the BC Club and you love the truth, you love hearing facts and the broaching the tough things that nobody else wants to talk about, BC Club's where it's at. They are a lively group.
Well, I expect a huge influx of BC Club members on this episode because, think of the amount of people and the amount of support that just got pulled from Benny Hinn because of this episode. I know where it's going. It's redirected straight into the BC Club.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Even if a fraction of it comes, I'm expecting a big... big increase in seed money headed our way.
That's what you
call it or not. But go to thebcclub.com. Come join our group. Come hang out with us on the Facebook. And I tell you what else. Come help us produce the show. The BC Club now is becoming very active in the production of the show. And we're ramping that up. And it's going super well. We're using their collective brains like a hive mind. So come be part of the hive mind. This show is designed... I mean, this whole thing, this isn't a show. It really is like a community that flows out of the BC Club anyway. And they are the show, and we are the show, and everything is one. We are all one together here. And that you can come join the hive mind and help create the show and be the show. You got to be the whatever, you know, change you want to see, whatever, something like that. Join the BC Club.
Heck yeah. And can I tell a few people who are in the BC Club?
Oh, yeah.
Old Richard Hammond, old Clint McManaman, old Renee Gishishin. We know Renee. Stenkamp, Heath Deals, Kenneth Luck, old Kenny, and old Chris Tyner. Man, these are some good folks in this BC Club. And if you don't know them, join the BC Club. You'll get to know them. They're some special people. They really are. All right, we got to get out of here. I got to go. I'm getting ready to hit the road with the old Cities Burn folks. If you're on the tour, you can check them out. Ask Cities Burn on Facebook or all that stuff. But come see us. We're down in the southeast and all the way to Baton Rouge and Dallas. I'll be there. Come by, say hey.
Be safe. Don't drink and drive, Toby.